think so.
This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending 8th of April 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. I'm your presenter, John Richards. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Jane Harding.
Hello.
And also in the studio today as a guest reader for the first half of the recording is the MP for Winchester and Chandlesford, Steve Brine.
Hello.
Welcome, Steve. It's good to see you. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 8th of April have been edited by Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your USB box, the player that is, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. There are four main headlines this week, and they are action on drink spiking concerns, climate group march through Winchester, food and music festival returning to Winchester, and farmer speaks out on rising cost of eggs. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Action on drink spiking concerns. Venues and authorities across Winchester have said they are working closely to protect partygoers from drink spiking in the city. This comes after a recent flurry of reported incidents on social media through a page believed to be run by students. The Chronicle spoke to one 19-year-old student who said he had been hospitalised after having his drink spiked during a night out in Winchester in February. He was found by his friends semi-conscious in the city centre and taken to hospital. The student, who wanted to remain anonymous, said, "I have no memory between midnight and 6 a.m, at which time I woke up in A&E. I was found by my friends slumped against a wall, being sick, sweating profusely, frothing from the mouth, my nose bleeding, and dropping in and out of consciousness. It was awful." A spokesman for the University of Winchester said they are aware of the issue of drinking spiking in the city and urged students to speak out if they believed they had been spiked. They said, "All students have a right to feel safe in their university city. We believe every nighttime venue has an important role to play in supporting the safety and welfare of their visitors, and we have a range of initiatives in place for students in campus. We encourage any student who suspects they've been spiked at any venue in the city to report it to the university student union and relevant authorities as soon as possible." Lee Davis, co-owner of one of the biggest venues in Winchester, Vodka Bar and Nightclub, said he and his staff have taken several steps to allay fears of spiking. He said, "We take drink spiking incredibly seriously. We are working closely with local authorities to try and prevent it as best we can. We've brought in drink covers, and every drink we serve, we now ask whether they want a top for it." Councillor Roger Bentote, chairman of the Licensing and Regulations Committee at Winchester City Council, said drink spiking was a serious problem and added they had not seen any instances reported to the committee. Home Secretary Priti Patel said spiking is a new and appalling trend and has asked officials to look at how the government can prepare an offence that will target the crime directly. There is currently no standalone legislation for spiking, and such reports are dealt with using the Drugging Offence or under the Sexual Offences Act, Scotland 2009. Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "Drink spiking can be really serious, and a clear message needs to be heard by anyone who thinks it's a bit of harmless fun. I'm pleased the Home Secretary promised, when she was last before the Home Affairs Committee, to look at how we can create a specific offence. It's something I would support in Parliament. The report instances of spiking to police call 101... Sorry. To report instances of spiking to police call 101, or you can contact it Crime Stoppers Anonymous online by calling 0800 555 111.
Thank you very much, Heather. Now, the next headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, Climate Group March Through Winchester. A climate action group recently held a protest in Winchester. Extinction Rebellion, XR, marched through the streets of Winchester on March the 26th as they underlined the United Nations Declaration of Code Red for human-driven global heating. Backed by the buoyant rhythms of the XR Samba Band, over 60 activists set out from the Great Hall and into the city centre. As the procession came to an end and epitaphs were showcased along the cathedral railings, one activist delivered a call to action. XR Winchester member Vanessa Grapple said, "We had a fantastic turnout today from XR Winchester and Southampton groups, as well as from other local green groups. The public showed a huge amount of support as we moved through the streets, underlining the huge public demand for governments to act now and tell the truth as they face up to the climate crisis." And there's some lovely pictures of a wonderfully cheerful mixed group of all ages marching through the high street. And they're carrying big banners. And I'm going to read out a couple of them because I think it's worth it. One of them says, "Join the rebellion 9th of April." And the other one says, "Preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known."
Thank you very much, Noel. Jane, please.
And here we have Food and Music Festival returning to Winchester. A food and music festival is returning to Winchester this summer, with a host of guest chefs and musicians announced. Foodies Festival will be taking place at North Walls Recreation Ground from July the 15th until the 17th. The festival had its licence renewed in February, despite complaints over noise from local residents. This year's lineup includes MasterChef The Professionals champion Daniel Lee, MasterChef champions Thomas Frake and Shalina Permalou, and Great British Bake Off star Jürgen Kraus. Daniel said, "I'm thrilled to be performing in the Chef's Theatre at Foodies Festival in Winchester this year. I'm hoping that people will enjoy a bit more of an in-depth and interactive explanation into why I cook the food I do and where my inspiration for it comes from. For me, food is all about bringing people together, and that's exactly what Foodies Festival is about." Shalina said, "It's great to be heading back to Foodies Festival. The weekends are always buzzing with great food and lovely foodie friends." The music lineup includes chart-topping singer-songwriter Gabrielle and Lee Ryan and Simon Webb from boy band Blue. New for the Friday, Foodies launched their Big Party Night, taking a nostalgic-filled trip back to the 90s, featuring some of the biggest music acts of the era, including Rosalla, Entrance and 911. New this year is a competition called Ready Steady Chef. Celebrity chefs from TV's biggest cooking shows will compete against each other, turning up the heat in the Chef's Theatre. Presented with a big bag of surprising ingredients chosen by their competitors, it will be a race against the clock to create the best dish and to win the public vote. Also, world chili-eating champion Shahina Wazim will join the tour and challenge those brave enough to compete. Competitions will be broadcast live across the world to huge League of Fire audiences. More than 150 exhibitors will showcase their produce, providing festival-goers with an opportunity to sample the best of the region and to try a huge selection of food and drink from around the world. Foodies Festival Director Sue Hitchin said, "We are delighted to be returning to Winchester this summer. The festival has become a meeting point for friends and family to enjoy a great weekend of delicious food, live music and fun. For tickets, visit foodiesfestival.com or call 0844 995 1111. And this, of course, is accompanied by a delightful photograph of a huge crowd on what is clearly a very hot sunny day, all with their hands in the air, clapping and looking as if they've had some very good tasting experiences as well.
Thank you, Jane. And now, Steve, the final story, please.
Thank you. Farmer speaks out on rising cost of eggs. Story by Harvey Lindsay. Free-range egg farmers are calling for the UK's major retailers to increase the price of a dozen eggs in their shops by 40p to avert a catastrophe in the sector. Farmers like Sam Burge from Winchester say they're being hit from all sides by huge hikes in energy and feed costs, as well as an increase in labour costs and raw materials. Sam, who runs Vale Farm in Sarum Road, feels the price for eggs in supermarkets needs to be increased. He said, "It's what needs to happen, but whether it will is doubtful. It's a good way to show how adrift the costs are. Our feed cost has gone up around 40 to 45% this year, and our power and electricity has gone up 100%. It's sickening because someone's livelihood relies on retail prices. Labour is up 10% because of the cost of living. We have £1.5 million invested in our building, but after paying bills and our staff, there isn't a lot to pay the bank manager back. My issue is that the buck stops at our door, and it's pretty desperate." A huge number of free-range egg farmers say they are currently losing money on every egg laid by one of their hens. Some say they can last 6 months before they go bust, while others are on the brink now. The message has been backed by the British Egg Industry Council, which has called for an immediate price rise to save farms. Robert Gooch from the British Free Range Egg Producers Association said, "For months, we've been raising the desperate situation with all the major retailers, and they've all ignored the perilous position their farmer suppliers are in. We contacted Asda, Sainsbury's, Morrison's, Tesco, Waitrose, Lidl, Aldi and Marks and Spencer. Not a single reply was received. There have been small rises in the price of eggs in shops, but that money has evaporated before it gets to the farm gate. It's the same old story of the farmer at the bottom of the chain being the last to see any price rise. This is not a false flag," he says. "The free-range egg sector is in crisis, and if something doesn't change, these farms will close and the people who run them will not have an income. This is a situation entirely out of farmers' hands. The whole world can see that feed and energy prices have gone through the roof. That has consequences, and we believe shoppers will understand the need for the egg price to increase on the shelves." Dan Brown, who has 44,000 hens in Suffolk, has been farming for 18 years, but says he will be, quote, "in serious trouble if the situation doesn't change in the next 6 months." He added, "Our feed costs are up 40%, energy is up 60%, and to bring in the next flock of hens is going to cost 10% more." He goes on, "Add in a labour increase of 10% and we are probably losing about 2 to 2.5 pence on every egg laid on the farm. Realistically, I should cancel the next flock, but farming is a long-term game and the eggs are already in the incubators waiting to hatch, so we're already committed." He concludes, "We will be in serious trouble if the market hasn't turned by the autumn."
Thank you very much, Steve. That concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with Christian comment, then death notices, followed by letters to the editor, editorial comment, first person and Belgarum diary, and we'll end with items of general news. Heather will start with Christian comment, please.
Rosemary Baker writes about Palm Sunday celebrations. "This Sunday, the Western Christian Church celebrates Palm Sunday. This commemorates the occasion of Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a donkey, along roads covered with palm leaves, amidst crowds shouting Hosanna and calling him the King of the Jews. Today, this scene is often reenacted outside churches in the form of marches of witness. In the village of King Somborne, where I used to be the Methodist minister, it was customary for all denominations of Christians to gather outside the Methodist chapel and march to the Anglican church, singing and waving palm branches. There a combined service was held. This Sunday's service on the BBC Songs of Praise will be broadcast from Winchester, when street pastors will feature. The following week, referred to as Holy Week, leads us through Maundy Thursday and Good Friday to Easter Day, Sunday. At its very essence, Easter is a Christian holiday that celebrates the resurrection of Jesus Christ after his crucifixion. It's also a popular secular holiday in many countries. Easter egg hunts and baskets full of small chocolate eggs and rather bigger chocolate eggs, perhaps delivered by a mysterious magic bunny, delight the culture at large, regardless of faith background. Many families gather for a special breakfast. And for some, an Easter sunrise or worship service may be an important annual experience. But where did these traditions come from? Do any of them have biblical or religious significance, or are they secular or even pagan in origin? Well, the Bible does not directly mention a holiday or festival set aside for the celebration of Christ's resurrection. However, the event that Easter celebrates, the resurrection, is chronicled in all four of the Gospels and is referred to over 100 times throughout the New Testament. The first written reference to a holiday celebrating the resurrection, referring to them as Pascha, the Latin translation of the Greek word for Passover, was made in the mid-second century AD. Among ancient Mesopotamian and Egyptian cultures, eggs symbolised life and rebirth. Eggs held similar significance in pre-Christian cultures across Europe. Originally, the eggs were dyed red to symbolise Christ's blood, but other colour crept in. The decorating of Easter eggs hit its peak of extravagance in the 19th century, when Russian royalty exchanged jewel-covered eggs as Easter, some made by the famous house of Fabergé. Much like the egg, hares and rabbits have long symbolised fertility and new life. But the Easter bunny we know today probably finds its origin among 17th century German Lutherans, who told stories about an egg-laying hare that delivered eggs to well-behaved children at Easter, much like Santa Claus. And there are other traditions which can still inspire and teach us today. Rosemary Baker.
Thank you, Heather. Here are the death announcements. Axford, John Axford, suddenly on the 23rd of March. Bannister, Kenneth Bannister, known as Ken, suddenly on the 24th of March. Breton, William Moyle Breton, on the 22nd of March, aged 79. Coombs, Peter William Coombs, on the 3rd of April, aged 91. Cooney, Stella Cooney, on the 24th of March, aged 98. Elliot, Andrew Thompson Elliot, on the 25th of March, aged 98. Good, John Benny Good, on the 19th of March, aged 92. Hicks, John David George Hicks, on the 27th of March, aged 81. Morgan, Helen Elizabeth Morgan, née Miles, on the 29th of March, aged 79. Scott Joint, Mary Louise, known as Lou, wife of the late Right Reverend Michael Scott Joint, on the 2nd of April. Starks, Elsie Starks, aged 95. Thompson, Elizabeth Mary Thompson, on the 14th of March, aged 90. Moving on now to letters to the editor. If you would like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. There are 14 letters this week. and Noel will start.
Yes, I have a letter from Paul Hickey, and the headline is Gloomy Ark. Complaints about the Ark, formerly known as the Discovery Centre in Winchester. What has happened to this place? Previously, there used to be an exhibition room on the ground floor, which used to have continuous exhibitions all year round, which were free to enter. This exhibition room has now been turned into an ordinary library room, just full of books. The gallery space on the first floor used to have exhibitions which were free to enter. You were invited to make a donation, but it wasn't compulsory. Now you have to pay at least £5 to enter this gallery space, and that £5 is just the concessionary price. Most people will now be charged more. The reception area is now very dark-coloured and gloomy-looking. This area looks very unfriendly and unwelcoming compared to what it used to look like. The new rows of communal seating are the most unergonomic seating I've ever sat in. The seating has small sloping backrests, which are so unsupportive. This seating is so uncomfortable to sit in. You find yourself slipping off this plastic or leather seating because of the stupid design. The ground floor is much darker in appearance than previously. It now looks gloomy and unfriendly. Change the decor to lighter colours and turn more lights on. The Ark boasts that it now offers lots of courses. This is untrue. What it now offers are lots of one-day workshops, which charge at least £20 each. Also, the cafe is now much smaller and has much less seating. It now looks much darker and gloomier. The Ark is now much more inferior and unwelcoming. How much money has been spent converting the Discovery Centre into the Ark? What a waste! The Winchester City Council, please correct all the things listed in this complaint. What an inferior conversion this really is. That's Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And now James Anderson writes, Solar Ignorance. The government push for British solar power appears to be based on technical ignorance. Solar contributes little to winter power when demand is higher, and the electricity sources that will meet winter demand will be in surplus for summer demand. Solar power and its mostly summer output is redundant. Perhaps the solar power might be used to produce hydrogen. The same panels placed in the Arabian Desert will produce three times as much power and far cheaper hydrogen. No surprise, then, that the smart money is investing in Arabian hydrogen. British solar, such as the Three Maids Hill field in Headbourne Worthy Parish, is an expensive white elephant and an environmental insult. Winchester City Council would do us all a favour by refusing permissions for any more of this governmental incompetence. And that was from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
This one is titled Put Down Guns. It's from Michael Newman in St Cross Road, Winchester. He writes, Children in camouflage uniform, taking defensive positions in a field. Then the staccato gunfire on automatic weapons. And all this on a warm spring day. Not in Kiev, but here in Winchester. Children in the college learning how to kill. My concern? Apart from the questionable inherent violence implicit in the training in an establishment that should be developing a generation schooled in the skills of peace, apart from such a philosophical debate, do the college authorities take into consideration that very soon Ukrainian mothers and children will be walking the streets of Winchester because of the kindness of residents? What will go through the hearts and souls of those refugees when gunfire is heard where they only sought peace? Could we not respect their situation and abandon gunfire, if only for a few months?
Peter Worth writes plan objection. Before moving to Winchester, I lived in Hertfordshire and was chairman of the local conservation group. I can assure Mr. Carter, who wrote on the March the 24th, that the attitude of the planning committee in Winchester is no different from the one I attended in Broxbourne, where all members were conservative with one Labour. It is indeed sad and depressing to have to listen to poor discussion on important matters when there has been a carefully presented case in the allotted time frame. The City Council knows that if a development is turned down, it is going to cost them money if there is an appeal. Peterworth, St Michael's Road, Winchester.
Nigel Turnbull writes about the need to drive. In reference to letters submitted Hampshire Chronicle March the 24th, Jeremy Pierce and Phil Gagg, both city centre residents, have the nerve to preach about cars entering the city when they have the luxury of being within spitting distance. Time and again you hear the same blinkered, selfish, single-minded ramblings from those who choose to live in the city. I thought those in the St Swithin Street area would be satisfied since the Lib Dems gave in to their lobbying for the closure of traffic to the square. Mr Pierce, who lives in Parchment Street, constantly full of residents' cars, suggests closure of St George's Street to traffic during the day, save for businesses and buses. As a born and bred Wintonian, never had there been a time in the past when people worried about cars in the city. It's become an obsession, mainly of those who move here from elsewhere. Frankly, they should have done more research before buying and realised there is life beyond their bubble. Nobody drives here just to spite them. Some actually help Winchester and its economy. Nigel Turnbull, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Dr. Lucy Jane Davis writes, stretched NHS. For years we have voiced concerns over how overstretched the NHS has become, but no one could ever have imagined just how bad the situation would be in 2022. As doctors working in the South, we have seen firsthand the profound impact that the pandemic has had on patients who are now facing the largest ever backlog of care in history, with no sign of improvement on the horizon. Fundamental to tackling this is the NHS workforce, the staff who have gone above and beyond, very often to their own detriment, to deliver care for patients in increasingly challenging, almost impossible situations. This has not been without a cost. The BMA predicts that in England alone, the NHS workforce is short of around 46,300 doctors, not to mention shortages of other healthcare staff who are vital to keeping our services afloat. Those staff who are working at increased risk of burnout and stress, with an alarming number of doctors considering leaving the profession or reducing their hours. The Workforce Planning Amendment to the Health and Care Bill, passed by the Lords in March, is crucial to achieving the greater accountability for safe staffing in the NHS. That is why the BMA is calling on doctors to write to their MPs to highlight the importance of voting to keep this amendment in the bill. The very future of our health service depends on an effective long-term workforce strategy, and this simple reporting measure will ensure greater transparency and accountability from the government, which is important if we are to make any progress. For patients, this is the very least they deserve. And that was from Dr. Lucy Jane Davis, BMA, South West Regional Council Chair, London.
OK, this letter is titled South Wanston. It's from Joy Brown of Chessel Street, Winchester. Further to the article published in the Hampshire Chronicle on Thursday, February 26th, written by Margaret Ayling regarding South Wanston. The letter from Margaret Ayling in the Chronicle evoked many memories. I too lived at South Wanston. My parents purchased a small holding just after the war, 25 acres plus with a so-called bungalow. No electricity and no water, only rain, for £500. I can remember it was hard work, and yet in those days everyone just got on with it and made the best of things. At the top of our track there was a little shop, just a room really, run by Mr. and Mrs. Norris. It's still standing. Mrs. Norris had suffered a massive stroke and was only able to use one arm and had difficulty in walking, but she managed to continue to serve people. Her husband used to milk the cow at the side of the track. He always had a dewdrop hanging from the end of his nose, and I was fascinated by this, as I never, thank goodness, saw it drop into the milk bucket. I often wish my children, now nearly OAPs, could see the fields and the hedgerows full of different flowers in abundance. There were local hops in the hall run by Peggy and Jack Taylor, with Ted Taylor playing the piano. All the village teenagers enjoyed these evenings, then walking home down the track with no made-up road or lighting, but the sky was full of stars. I'm sure that many of your older readers and listeners understand and agree that things ain't what they used to be. That's from Joy Brown of Chesil Street.
Richard Davis' letter is headed Love Winchester. I have today just received by post a copy of a magazine entitled We Love Winchester, described as a free magazine for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, and thinking there might be something of interest contained within, I read through this publication, only to realise that it was a party political paper from the Lib Dems, although the first mention of their name does not appear until page 7 of 8. Nowhere does the Lib Dem logo appear. Now, if this is what one can expect from them, producing a wholly misleading publication, not having the courage to make clear who it is from, does not bode well for their chances in the next election. Richard Davis, Wadden Lane, Ossilbury.
Yes. Dr. Tony Saunders writes about signs of life. He says, my brief review of some road signs. Life-saving, think bike. The majority of cyclists prefer to wear road colour lycra, cycle with head down and pedal as if they were in a race. Seemingly unaware, they do not show up well to motorists. Puzzling, share the road. What are the other options? No stopping, lay-by closed. What are people supposed to do in an emergency? Irritating, road ahead closed, not another detour. Amusing, slow deer. Often out of date, flood. Good for a chuckle, credit cards taken. Signed by a lay-by containing burger van near Alsford. That's Dr. Tony Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
And this letter is headed Plan Concerns. We, the undersigned, are getting increasingly concerned about the way the Winchester District local plan is being managed. We recognise the challenges Winchester City Council faces and the role a local plan has in finding economic and housing solutions. However, a sound local plan needs to be properly prepared with thorough public consultation. This is in all our interests. Winchester's draft local plan outlining housing allocations is due for publication this summer. However, the timeline for consultation with the Winchester residents and the parish councils on the SHELA, the Strategic Housing and Economic Land Availability Assessments, has slipped significantly. Winchester City Council's action plan proposed to set up a series of meetings with parish councils in 2021 on initial SHELA assessment and on potential locations, sites for growth, renewal, protection areas in a new style local plan. There needs to be a huge amount of public consultation before May the 2022, including the preparation, assessment and agreement of the draft local plan. Parishes across the district face SHELA proposals totalling thousands of dwellings. We are very aware, however, that the additional housing requirement for the whole of the Winchester district is 2,700, plus an undisclosed housing allocation from the PFSH, the Partnership for Southern Hampshire. Many of us have already advised Winchester Council that the green fields put forward by developers are largely unsuitable for housing, for many reasons, including the reliance on the car, poor infrastructure, including roads, schools and healthcare, flood risk, and the need to preserve settlement gaps, as well as historical, agricultural and landscape value. Winchester Council has not yet found time to discuss these with our residents. Consequently, we are not able to take local soundings about the potential for development in any ward. We urgently need Winchester Council to urgently assess and clarify their local plan proposals. So, here we are less than 3 months from the completion of the draft local plan, and we have no word on housing numbers, the SHELA assessments, or when Winchester Council will be consulting with us. Please, could someone from Winchester City Council pick up the phone? And that is from a long list of chairs of parish councils from Badger Farm, Upham, Hursley, Oliver's Battery, Otterbourne and Sparshot.
And here's a letter from Hannah Greenberg, who lives in High Street in Twyford. It's titled, 20 miles per hour, much safer for pedestrians. She writes, I coordinate the county-wide campaign for 20 miles per hour where people live, work and play. We have much support from residents and local councils throughout Hampshire who want their streets to feel like they belong to their community rather than an inconvenience on someone else's route. In a letter published on February 24th, Richard Long suggests that the current 20 miles per hour roads in Winchester have not been as effective as hoped. This is understandable. Evidence shows there is more effective speed limit reduction where wide area 20 miles per hour is introduced, essentially normalising this speed where people and traffic mix. Donna Jones has publicly stated her support and the police's intention to enforce 20 miles per hour. 20 is demonstrably safer. Every 1 mile per hour of speed reduction leads to a 6% reduction in collisions. A pedestrian hit at 20 miles per hour is most likely to survive without serious injury. At 30 miles per hour, a pedestrian is more likely to die or sustain a life-changing injury. That's from Hannah Greenberg, High Street, Twyford.
Celia Parks' letter is headed No Ice Rink. I was sorry to read in the Hampshire Chronicle on March the 31st that the Winchester Cathedral Market will, sadly, return without the ice rink again this year. Whilst the Christmas market attracts visitors to Winchester and offers all sorts of beautifully handcrafted gift options for those who can afford to buy them, the skating rink had a broad appeal to local residents, particularly young people and families. Is this an example of COVID acting as a catalyst for the demise of an enjoyable, sociable and healthy pastime, albeit perhaps not the most lucrative use of the space? I can't help wondering about representation on the committee which made decisions on how best to use the cathedral space at Christmas and what criteria was used when making judgments. Celia Parks, Duke Street, Mitchell Dever.
And Simon Lever writes in Garden Praise. The reopening of the Winchester Cathedral's Dean Garnier Garden is most welcome, Chronicle, March 31st. On entering the garden, there is a tangible feeling of peace and tranquility. A variety of plants and bushes, historic stoneware and pristine lawns add to an atmosphere of calm and serenity. The team of stonemasons and carpenters should be acknowledged for their dedication in facilitating the reopening of this iconic garden. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And this letter from Flavia Bateson is entitled Thomas Stopher. As Barry Sherlock wrote in his article Winchester, the Stopher Family and the Archives, Chronicle, March the 24th, Thomas Stopher certainly made his imprint on Winchester as an architect, a surveyor, alderman and mayor. Amazingly, he also found time to support the Winchester Dramatic Society. Shakespearean roles were his forte, commencing with Paolo in Othello, 1865, followed by Prince Hal in Henry IV, 1866, and Macduff in Macbeth during 1873 and 1885. In 1908, he was involved in the organisation of the Winchester National Pageant, also, at age 71 years, taking the role of Raleigh. This was an event on a monumental scale held in the ruins of Wolsey Castle and involving 3,000 people in a series of historical tableaux. The pageant was blessed with beautiful weather and was immensely popular. The Hampshire Chronicle praised Stopher's performance. He is a true Raleigh, a very fine piece of acting. And that letter was from Flavia Bateson, the archivist at the Winchester Dramatic Society in Cheswell Street. and is accompanied by an old photograph of Thomas Stopher, who is clearly in an Elizabethan play, as he has a wonderful white Tudor ruff round his neck.
Thank you, Jane. And Steve will now read for us this week's editorial comment.
Yes, this is the Hampshire Chronicle editorial. They always say published since 1772, which is remarkable. And it's titled Stop Smashing Our City Centre Windows. You'll be hard-pressed to find somebody who thinks Winchester is an ugly city. A magnificent cathedral, a centre steeped in history, wonderful period buildings. It's a beautiful place. However, that beauty comes at a price. Shopkeepers and landlords are bound by rules that mean they can't make significant changes to the front of their shops. Yes, it stops someone installing garish flashing neon signs or painting their shop neon pink, but it also stops them installing metal shutters. Lately, there's been a spate of anti-social incidents that have left shop windows smashed, and the boards and patches that have gone up afterwards are certainly not a pretty sight to look at. Late at night, the high street can be a lively place, as with any city. And while we're not advocating armed patrols, something needs to be done to stop the minority from spoiling our beauty. Whether that's the police, council, bid or drinking establishments themselves, let's see some action taken to stop this disgusting behaviour.
Thank you very much, Steve. First person this week is written by George Hayter. And Noel is going to treat us to that.
Yes. George Hayter says he's having a good moan in Rome. Most travel writers fail to tell their readers the whole truth. Holiday articles in too many newspapers and magazines are brazenly uncritical, doing little more than recycling each location's accepted myths. Guidebooks, too, project a benign pink onto even the greyest of destinations. Travel correspondents would have us believe that everywhere is marvellous, when you and I know that travel is dogged by uncertainty and dismay. Invariably, holidays are sabotaged, if not by human frailty, then by the weather. The more hard-earned cash that you punt on the holiday of your dreams, the worse you feel when the accommodation fails to live up to journalistic hyperbole. Travel journalists rarely mention clouds, rain, fog, lost luggage, arguments, sunbeds bagged with towels, roads clogged with traffic, or shorelines covered in seaweed. Holiday upsets may be harrowing to experience, but for some cathartic or sadistic reason, they are fun to read about. Perhaps we travellers enjoy the reassurance of reading that we are not alone in suffering holiday blues. That's why, in this account of my current stay in Italy, I am going to give you only the holiday's bad points. My super honest summary of my 3 month stay in the flat in Rome will not mention the city's quaint medieval streets or welcoming pavement cafes. I won't bore you with sun-baked spaghetti lunches in pretty piazzas or warm evening strolls admiring the Colosseum silhouetted against a romantic sunset. My travel writing will spare you my hike alongside a crumbling aqueduct 100 feet high and 2 millennia old, or the exhilaration of climbing atop the famous Vatican Renaissance dome designed by Michelangelo. And I'll spare you the joy standing before Michelangelo's mighty Moses sculpture or Bernini's exquisite marble nudes. No, I'll mention none of it. Now here comes the material I think you will enjoy. The holiday horrors that will render readers in Hampshire grateful that they are not spending spring in Italy. There's no Marmite, Shreddies, or crunchy peanut butter in Rome, at least not in any shop we've found in the 8 weeks we've been here so far. Absence of favourite groceries doesn't sound too disastrous to you. How about this then? Much of this beautiful city is covered in graffiti, and what isn't sprayed with aerosol paint is often covered in litter and cigarette ends. The historic centre is relatively tidy, but venture a few blocks out from the Trevi Fountain or the Spanish Steps and you can find yourself in an outer city ugliness of roadside rubbish and run-down blocks of flats. It's true that the water in nearly all Rome's hundreds of glorious fountains is beautifully clean. yet some of the city's equally famous parks contain barely a blade of grass, let alone a flower. Pedestrians in central Rome are obliged to use what doesn't really qualify as a pavement because it has so little width. It's more of a narrow ledge. Things get intimate with people coming the other way. Venturing onto a zebra crossing puts you in fear of being chopped at the knees by a car bumper. True, drivers do stop, but only if they can't avoid you. They will try to swerve round you so that, although you're walking on a zebra, vehicles whoosh past inches in front of you and inches behind you. Rome in the last couple of months hasn't been all that warm. Yes, it is warm in the afternoon, usually reaches 16 centigrade, usually with a blue sky too. But clear skies have sometimes made the mercury drop almost to zero by dawn. Despite the Mediterranean climate, I've had to go out sightseeing in coat and scarf. Yes, life is nicer in Winchester. You're better off staying in Hampshire in almost every way, except perhaps climate. And even then, everyone in Rome moans about that. They say that in summer, Rome is unbearably hot.
Yes, well, some people will complain about anything. That's yes, perfectly true. Moving on from that, Heather is going to read an alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
When the city centre boasted three gasometers. Can you imagine the outrage if this was proposed today? The construction of gasometers in residential areas of Winchester. Yet this is what happened in mid-Victorian times as gas became the main form of lighting. This ordnance survey map from 1897 shows the two gasometers on Andover Road and another on Water Lane. They must have been almost otherworldly structures. In the 19th century, most buildings were made of brick, some of stone, and others of wood. But there, looming over the streetscape, came these metal tubes that rose and fell as they filled with gas and reached as high as two or three-story houses. Yet the Victorians viewed such things with civic pride, a sign that Winchester was keeping up with the times. Interestingly, the building of the Stanmore housing estate after World War I was also welcomed by the whole city, as the purpose-built council housing replaced the slums in the city centre, even if many of those homes were medieval in origin. Compare that with the sustained opposition to the 21st century equivalent, Barton Farm, aka King's Barton. Gasometers only had a limited time at the forefront of technology. Belgarum does not know when the Winchester ones were removed. The large gas holders in Northam, Southampton, which on a clear day can be seen from St Catherine's Hill, are also now unused, with the likelihood of being that they will be demolished. There's a maps attached, and they show the gasometers right bang in the middle of the Andover Road and Lower Stockbridge Road junction, and another one on Water Lane. So there you go, three gasometers in the residential areas of Winchester.
Thank you very much, Heather. Jane will please now read View from Westminster.
And View from Westminster this week is from Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond. The horror of the war in Ukraine reached a new low this week when evidence of atrocities against civilians came to light. The bodies of at least 410 civilians have been found in mass graves with reports that some were shot while their hands were tied. There are fears that other such acts have taken place during the Russian invasion. That this could be happening in Europe in the 21st century is almost incomprehensible. The pictures are horrifying. Just last year, I was in Bosnia and Herzegovina with fellow senior MPs. It was a visit for the 30th anniversary year of the beginning of the civil war in the Balkans that cost the lives of many thousands. During our time there, we went to Armici and to Srebrenica, where there were massacres of civilians during the hostilities. We thought then that this was something that could not happen again on our continent. However, I fear history has repeated itself. the UK, along with its allies, have called for an international investigation into what has happened in Ukraine. If these are war crimes, then those who have done it need to face justice. Ukraine has knocked COVID from the headlines to some extent, but the virus is still very much here, and infections are rising in most parts of the UK now restrictions have ended. Our vaccine rollout and better treatments mean hospitalisations and deaths from COVID are a fraction of what they were. However, we cannot be complacent, and we need to protect the most vulnerable as we learn to live with this virus. I'm really pleased that people aged 75 years and over, residents in care homes, and those aged 12 years and over with weakened immune systems are now eligible for a spring COVID booster jab. The booster will be given 6 months after the last dose, and everyone should wait 4 weeks before having the jab if they have tested positive recently. You can call 119 or book an appointment online at nhs.uk/bookcoronavaccination. If called forward, please go and have the jab. Vaccines have proven themselves to be the best defence against the virus. It is the best way to keep everyone from getting seriously ill, and it will allow us to live with this disease and recover from the pandemic. The cost of living crisis is hitting many families across Meon Valley hard. In this spring statement, the Chancellor outlined support for those who are most vulnerable via a fund to be accessed by councils, a rise in the national insurance threshold, and a 5p reduction in fuel duty, as well as tax breaks for business. The issues of war and COVID disruption to supply chains is something the government can do little about, as they are the drivers of inflation and the rise in energy costs. If the government was to help everyone with this problem, then we would be borrowing huge sums yet again, just a short time after the cost of COVID.
Thank you, Jane. Lighting up times. Sunrise this morning, Friday the 8th of April, was at 6:25 a.m. Sunset will be at 7:49 p.m. Sunrise this coming Wednesday, the 13th of April, will be at 6:14 a.m. and sunset will be at 7:57 p.m. Here is a brief announcement about Easter weekend. Next Friday, the 15th of April, will be Good Friday. We'll be in the studio recording next Friday, but there won't be any Royal Mail deliveries on Saturday or the following Monday, Easter Monday. We will post your yellow wallets as usual, but they may not be delivered to you until the following Tuesday, 19th of April. We'll continue now with further items of general news, starting with one read by Heather.
Thanks, John. Film and TV star helps launch Hare's Art Trail. Actor Sarah Parrish arrived in the University of Winchester in a vintage open-top car accompanied by a giant hare sculpture this week. She was at an event to promote the Hares of Hampshire Art Trail, which opens in Winchester and Southampton in June. Student nurses Sophie Amos, Jessica Slater and Maisie Stewart and Assistant Vice-Chancellor Sam Jones met Sarah on her tour of organisations which have pledged their support for the public art event. The university is sponsoring its own giant hare sculpture for the trail, which is being designed and decorated by Winchester-based professional artist Jenny Muncaster. Jenny's highly decorative, abstract design is about embracing diversity, promoting health and well-being, and being comfortable in one's own skin. And there's a picture of the open car with Sarah Parrish and a huge hare, which has got the blue sky, a beautiful building, green grass and flowers and other things all painted on it. I am assuming that's the sculpture. Sam said the university is excited to be a part of this colourful public art event and to support the Parish Trust, the wonderful work it does, the Murray Parish Trust, for children in Hampshire. Our Faculty of Health and Wellbeing is committed to enriching the health and well-being of individuals, families and communities, so we've chosen a special theme of health for our hair sculpture. It's also fitting that some of our wonderful nursing students have had an opportunity to meet Sarah today and lend their support to the event. The Murray Parish Trust and Wild in Art have launched the Hairs of Hampshire Art Trial to raise funds for Southampton Children's Hospital. The trust was set up by Sarah and her husband, actor James Murray, in 2014 to ensure the best medical care for children in the region. Sarah, who lives just outside Winchester, has starred in many TV and film roles like Peak Practice and Hearts and Bones and various other things, and she said, "We are delighted to be working with the University of Winchester on Hairs of Hampshire. Having such a prestigious university on board is a huge boost to this project. A public, free, family event like Hairs of Hampshire is a perfect charitable fit for the University of Winchester, and we look forward to having lots of fun together over the coming months. For 10 weeks this summer, streets, parks and public spaces in Winchester and Southampton will be brought to life by an exhibition of individually designed giant hair sculptures. The Free Family Trail will showcase the artist's talent the country has to offer and contribute to the cultural life of the area."
New homes made for barn owls. Barn owls in Sparsholt near Winchester can look forward to snug new homes in which to raise their owlets as a result of the efforts of a group of students and New Forest-based charity, the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust, GWCT. The students from the Wildlife Ecology and Conservation Degrees courses and the Game and Wildlife Level 1 course at Sparsholt University Centre and Sparsholt College have built 8 new nest boxes during a recent workshop run by GWCT scientists working on the Owl Box Initiative. The nest boxes will be sited on farmland on the college campus and in a nearby farm. Jodie Case of GWCT said, "Working with students is a great opportunity for us to share wildlife-friendly farming techniques with the next generation of conservationists and land managers. The GWCT, which conducts conservation research and works with farmers and land managers to boost biodiversity in the British countryside, gave a talk to the students on the Owl Box Initiative. Through the project funded by Green Recovery Challenge Fund, GWCT scientists are working with 100 farms over 40,000 hectares to inspire farmers and communities to work for the conservation of the iconic barn owl, which can also benefit wider wildlife. Over the years, nesting cavities have been lost through the loss of trees and the modernisation or loss of farm buildings," Jodie said. "So nest boxes are a very effective way to increase cavities and to encourage barn owls to breed." The students heard from Jodie about the initiative's conservation, research and community engagement work, promoting wildlife-friendly farming, as well as practical guidance on building and siting nest boxes for barn owls. Sparsholt College lecturer Stuart Robertson said, "This has been a great educational experience for the students, as they not only gained practical experience of building the owl boxes and learning about barn owl habitat and nesting requirements, but also made valuable industry contact through working in partnership with ex-Sparsholt student Jodie and the GWCT Owl Box Initiative. Following the talk, the students set to work building the nest boxes with instructions from the Barn Owl Trust. The wood for some of the boxes was provided by a local farmer who gives the college students access to land where they learn various countryside management techniques." And this is accompanied by a picture of a whole crowd of the students with their barn owl boxes, which actually look much bigger than I thought they would do.
And now more than £3 million given to tackle violence. More than £3 million has been allocated to tackle the root cause of violence in Hampshire. The Home Office has donated the sum of £3.5 million, which will now be used by the country's Violence Reduction Unit, VRU, to tackle violent crime and address its underlying causes. Since it was set up, the VRU has also funded a number of early intervention projects, working with thousands of young people to stop problems occurring in the future. It does this by raising awareness and educating people about the consequences of violent crime. It comes as Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire, Donna Jones, has said she is very concerned about the growth of violence on our streets. She said, "I welcome the decision of the Home Office to provide 3 years of funding, giving us greater opportunities to find long-term sustainable solutions and to build upon the initiatives that have been put in place. When we look at the past experiences of young people who are committing knife crime, a significant number have had a childhood that has included violence, drugs, alcohol abuse, or other adverse experiences. It is important to identify and resolve these issues early on to prevent them from escalating. It is vital that we engage with young people as soon as we identify them as being vulnerable or at risk, and that support is available at key points. Over the past year, the VRU has been expanding its Youth Navigator programme and is now available in Southampton and Winchester hospitals. Commissioner Jones added, "Arriving at A&E with injuries caused by violence, as well as other vulnerabilities such as mental ill health and self-harm, can be a wake-up call, and having the right support in place can help these young people to realise there is a way out and to take positive steps to reduce risk of harm. One example of VRU support in the past includes when Focus Education and Development CIC worked with a group of young people at Southampton Youth Offending Service to develop a series of posters that portray an anti-knife crime message. Crime and Policing Minister Kip Malthouse, who visited Chandler's Ford last week, said, "The very worst part of my job is hearing from families who have lost loved ones to violence and finding out that something could have been done to prevent it. We must do more to reach those at risk of violence early on to break the cycle of crime."
And here's a nice story. Epic bike ride for stroke survivor. A Winchester dad who was told he would likely be bedbound for the rest of his life is set to defy the odds by cycling 50 kilometres for charity. Adam Smith, 37, faced the prospect of living with lifelong disabilities after suffering two strokes, which required a complex emergency surgery in September of 2017. Just a few years on, he's now preparing for Brighton Marathon Ride, a cycling event which takes place before the main marathon on the 10th of April, to raise money for the Stroke Association. Adam first sustained a neck injury during a white-collar charity boxing match when his opponent, an experienced boxer, landed a punch to the top of his head. Recalling the events which unfolded after the fight, he said, "I had a headache for about 3 weeks after the boxing match. Then I think on the following Thursday morning, I was experiencing facial weakness. My whole face had dropped on one side. My wife told me she thought I'd had a stroke, but I said, 'Don't be stupid, it can't be that.' They rushed me down to hospital where they told me I was too young to have had a stroke, sent me for a scan, and everything came back fine. It was only when Adam's wife asked doctors to check his neck where the injury originally occurred that a second scan unearthed he had in fact suffered a mild stroke. After being kept in for minor treatments and observations overnight, Adam tried to get out of bed to go to the toilet the next morning when he suffered a second, much more severe stroke. 'I was paralysed down the whole right-hand side of my body,' he said. 'As I went to move, I just couldn't, so I ended up collapsing on the floor and knocking myself out.' Adam was rushed to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to Southampton for a complex emergency surgery. His family were told the operation could leave him severely disabled and even bedbound for the rest of his life. However, despite never making a full recovery, he said the progress he's made in the space of a few years has left many gobsmacked. Adam had signed up to do a charity bike ride a couple of years ago with his dad, but was advised against it by doctors in the lead up to the event. With COVID pushing back his goal of getting on the bike even further and his health having dramatically improved, he's now raring to go."
Hmm. This is for the cake lovers among us. A new artisan bakery opens in city centre. And there's a picture of smiling shop assistants, or possibly bakers, with lots of delicious-looking croissants and cakes in front of them and some lovely-looking bread behind them. A bakery has opened in Winchester city centre after months of work renovating the historic property. The Winchester Bakery opened its first shop in the High Street on Wednesday. The business started as a wholesale business in 2020, but after seeing the result of the demand for their bread, it was decided to branch out and open a shop. It's in the unit that was the West Cornwall Pasty Company, just by the Buttercross. After months of refurbishment of the Grade 2 listed building, the business opened its doors this week. Joe Fellows, director of the Winchester Bakery, said, "As we have been setting up the shop, we've been delighted to hear how keen people are for us to open. We can't wait to welcome everyone inside to taste what we've been baking. As well as a takeaway counter, downstairs, selling sweet and savoury goods and coffee, it has a seating area upstairs."
This is a very sad story. Mum died after advice on birth. Oh. Her mother died giving birth to her second child after not being properly warned about the risks of delivering naturally, a coroner has been told. Environmental engineer Lucy Howell had a caesarean for the birth of her eldest daughter, Rosie, which required special surgery to repair. However, when the 32-year-old went into labour with new baby Pippa 4 years later, she tried to have a natural birth. Tragically, she suffered a rupture during the delivery, and while her daughter survived, she passed away. Now her family are demanding answers from the NHS, saying she was given conflicting advice about the risks of a natural delivery. It is hoped a full inquest will establish whether she would have survived if she had chosen an alternative mode of birth, such as a C-section. But the coroner criticised the Health Service Trust involved, saying it has not yet given a candid explanation of what happened. The hearing follows a damning report this week which found at least 200 babies and 9 mothers died as a result of failings at Shrewsbury and Telford Hospital Trust. The inquiry into the largest maternity scandal in the NHS's history, spanning the past 20 years, found 131 babies were stillborn, with 70 dying soon after birth. The Ockenden report found mothers were blamed for their babies' deaths, that babies' deaths were not often investigated, and grieving parents were not listened to. The pre-inquest review was told that Mrs. Howell of Bishops Waltham Hants went into labour in March 2021 and was admitted to Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester to be induced. However, her uterus ruptured during the delivery and the baby was then born in her stomach. Despite attempts to resuscitate her, she died on March the 12th. Mrs. Howell's family were told that the post-mortem gave the cause of death as a uterine rupture and amniotic fluid embolism. An investigation was then launched by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. The hearing was told that following the birth of her first daughter in 2017, Mrs. Howell had to have surgery to repair scarring. Her family believe this may have made her vulnerable to having a natural delivery and have questioned the advice she was given ahead of the birth of Pippa. Winchester Coroner's Court heard that it's disputed whether Mrs. Howell was given sufficient information to make an informed decision on whether she should have given birth naturally, having had a caesarean previously. Vanessa Cashman, the family's lawyer, told the pre-inquest review she was given conflicting advice, if it can be called that. Area Coroner Rosamond Rhodes Kemp told the hearing she felt the statement supplied by the Trust so far did not provide a full explanation of what happened. Mrs. Rhodes Kemp said, "For the family, the Trust have to show that they have learnt from what happened, but they can only learn from it if there has been an open and candid explanation of what happened. The statements I have seen do not reflect that at the moment. The statements do not reflect learning and full understanding into exactly what happened." Mrs. Rhodes Kemp said she now has questioned has questioned about Mrs. Howell's antenatal care, her labour, and whether Mrs. Howell was given sufficient information to make an informed decision. The advice given is not huge to women who've had a caesarean, she said. This was a rare situation. There are issues regarding the management of the labour. The starting point is, should there have been a labour, and who said what to whom? The second issue is what the labour management appropriately given the risk. I don't think anyone could have done anything regarding resuscitation, but I'm keen to understand how we got to this point, whether it could have been avoided. I think there are issues regarding the labour and whether this could all have been avoided had she not had a vaginal birth. Mrs. Howell's widower, Matthew, who is bringing up their two daughters alone, said the shock and pain of Lucy's death has been unimaginable. She was a devoted mother and a wonderful person. The full inquest will be held later this year. And there's a lovely picture of Lucy Howell with her older daughter walking along a field full of green grass, and she's wearing a long pink dress, and the little girl is wearing a lovely white hat.
And here we have Bill is welcomed by TV actor and MP. A new bill that will make it easier for people with Down syndrome and their families to secure the services they need has been welcomed by Line of Duty actor Tommy Jessop and Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond. The Down syndrome bill has passed both Houses of Parliament and become law. It is due to receive royal assent in the next few days. The Act will place a duty on English local authorities to assess the likely social care needs of persons with Down syndrome and plan provision to help support them. Mrs. Drummond co-sponsored the landmark legislation after her colleague Liam Fox introduced it as a private member's bill, and it then gained government and cross-party support. Mrs. Drummond said, "I am really pleased this world-leading piece of legislation is about to become law because I believe it will make a huge difference to people with Down syndrome and their families. For too long it has been a struggle for those with this condition to get the right access to help and assistance. Of course, many live, active, rewarding and very independent lives, but historically there have been hurdles around that access. I was very happy to co-sponsor the bill, and I would like to thank Liam Fox and the National Down Syndrome Policy Group for their work on this. The Act will require the Secretary of State to publish guidance to public bodies to ensure that they are clear on how they should meet the needs of people with Down syndrome. Best practice across health, education, social care and housing will set out giving practical advice on how the appropriate steps can be taken to meet the needs of those with Down syndrome when planning, designing and delivering services. Once royal assent is granted, there will be a public consultation undertaken to inform development of the necessary guidance around the Down Syndrome Act and that it is fit for purpose. It is expected that necessary guidance around the law will be developed within a year after the passing of the Act. Among the celebrities backing the bill is Line of Duty actor Tommy, who is from Winchester. Mr. Jessop, an ambassador for the National Down Syndrome Policy Group, NDSPG, composed of charities and support bodies, said on his social media account, "At long last, everyone living with Down syndrome will get better opportunities in life. At long last, we will be able to show people our lives truly are worth living. Hooray!" And this is accompanied by a lovely photo of the actor, Tommy Jessop, looking extremely handsome with a beautiful striped jumper and looking face-to-face with the audience. And I believe that Tommy and his mother setting up the Blue Apple Theatre in Winchester was the start of the whole acceptance of Down syndrome and less abled actors in the world of acting.
More city children living in poverty. More children in Winchester were living in poverty during the first full year of the coronavirus pandemic than ever recorded before, figures show. Child poverty charities warned that the government's response to the cost of living crisis risks reversing the fall in the number of children living below the breadline across the United Kingdom. The Department for Work and Pensions data shows 2,342 children aged under 16 were living in families with low incomes in 2020 to 2021. That's about 10%, just over 10% of all children in the area. And that was up from 9%, just over 9% the year before. It was also the highest since comparable records began in 2014 to 16, when the figure stood at 7.4%. A family is defined as in low income if it earns less than 60% of the national median household income before housing costs are considered. Families are included in the figures if they've claimed child benefit alongside another means of support like universal credit, tax credits or housing benefit at some point in the year. There are different figures which take housing costs into account, and they show nearly 4 million United Kingdom children were living in relative poverty in 2020 to 21. Now, this was down from 4.3 million the year before, but it was above where it was 10 years ago when it was only 3.6 million. The Child Poverty Action Group said this shows the UK government has the power to protect children from poverty. But Alison Garnham, chief executive of the charity, said many of the children who were lifted out of poverty by the £20 increase in universal credit have already been forced back over the brink by the government's later actions. And as millions struggle with spiralling costs, we know the picture will worsen. Over a quarter of the children in poverty, aged 0 to 15, were under the age of 5 in Winchester last year. The vast majority of youngsters, 80%, live in working households. Action for Children said the government risks failing on its manifesto pledge to cut child poverty and force millions of families into years of middle hardship without further measures. A government spokesman said the landscape is different now than it was during the pandemic, and that filling the record number of job vacancies is the best route out of poverty.
Hampshire dancer on ballet tour. A final year dance student from Hampshire will be performing with the renowned dance company Ballet Central on their welcome return to touring this spring. Polly de Lotbiniere from East Meon will be joining the company on a four-month, 11-venue tour across England starting April 22nd. The tour starts in Hornchurch, Essex, and will also stop in Birmingham, Cambridge, Guildford, Newbury, London and more. And that includes Theatre Royal Winchester, incidentally. Polly, 19, attended Portsmouth High School for Girls and began her training at Liss Forest Ballet School while attending the Central School of Ballet Associate Programme on Saturdays. She's now in the final year of a three-year BA Hons Professional Dance and Performance degree at the Central School of Ballet in London. Polly said, "I'm really excited to perform on stage with Ballet Central alongside my friends who I've trained with over 3 years. It will be gratifying to showcase all the hard work at Central we have put in. It will also be very fun to explore new places that we will get to work in. Learning new pieces was a challenging process. However, achieving the end results was extremely satisfying. We were treated like a company rather than a school." Ballet Central will be presenting a new cast of exceptional dancers, performing a mixture of original pieces from distinguished choreographers and restaging an existing contemporary work. Under the artistic direction of artist-in-residence Michaela Polly and artistic director Kate Coyne, three new pieces will be presented. Kate said, "Joining Ballet Central and the experience of performing on a tour distinguishes our dancers and supports their future employability. Performing is the ultimate goal for professional dance students, so the chance to bring all their training to a peak in front of a live audience fulfills ambitions and stimulates new learning. It's a joy for our dancers and audiences alike. Michaela's new piece, Unbound, involves this entire company created as a celebration of the dynamism of the ensemble. Michaela said, "The experience of working with renowned choreographers in the creative process is invaluable for student dancers. They have to learn to absorb, understand and interpret the story of each piece and the choreographer's different ways of working. This accelerates their growth as future professionals and helps to prepare for the transition into company life when they graduate in July."
And now a new restaurant brings Taste of the Med to the city. An award-winning Greek and Cypriot restaurant, Takeaway, is set to open a new location in Winchester this spring, bringing 10 jobs to the city. Restaurant owner Paul Pirgoudis has announced Yaya's Kitchen will open in 56 St George's Street, serving a menu inspired by his grandma Yaya Kristalla, who lived in Famagusta, where he spent his summers growing up. It will open in the unit currently occupied by Tom's Deli. Tom's Deli has been running for more than 30 years, and early last year the businesses went on the market when owner Tom Romita said he was looking to retire. It was bought by Paul, who said he will be slowly transforming the deli into Yaya's. Paul said he was delighted to be coming to Winchester and that he hopes people will love his menu, which he makes with the fresh ingredients and local produce, catering for vegans and meat eaters. He said, "Winchester is beautiful and has a lively, lovely demographic. There are a lot of restaurants, but no Greek, and I wanted to bring that to Winchester. I've only been in Winchester for 2 days, but the customers are a pleasure. Engaging with people this week has been fantastic. We want to give back to the community, and I think I can add value to a great town." Paul will be trading as Tom's Deli for around 2 months while Yaya's Kitchen is being prepared. The original staff will also stay at Tom's Deli, with an additional 10 vacancies soon to be available, from kitchen staff to front of house. The restaurant will serve an extensive menu of Greek flatbread wraps, Cypriot-style kebabs, salads, seafood, platters and desserts, and has a price range of £5 to £38. And this is accompanied by two photos, one of the owner of Yaya's Kitchen, Paul, pictured with the owner of Tom's Deli, lovely Tom Romita, still there in his woolly hat, which he always wears, and I think produced the best spaghetti in Winchester. And underneath, a photograph of Yaya's Kitchen food, which looks also delicious. Flatbreads, lots of coloured, beautiful coloured vegetables, topped with fresh basil leaves, and is making me extremely hungry.
Hampshire in the top 10. This is a nice story about children. Mm-hmm. New research has revealed that Hampshire is in the top 10 for the United Kingdom's greenest outdoor areas for children. The study by childcare and education expert Little Ones London analysed TripAdvisor ratings and reviews of the United Kingdom's top kid-friendly outdoor locations to unveil the 10 regions with the best green spaces for children. And Hampshire's seventh on the list, with 7 venues, and it's the highest total reviews per area of 5,701. Hampshire's Hawk Conservancy Trust is the most reviewed venue in the study, totalling 3,192 reviews. And it also found that Cumbria was the greenest area for children with the most natural venues, 15 in total.
New 10K run and community fete to support Village School. A new multi-terrain 10K run and community fete is being held to raise money for a village school. Compton and Shawford Preschool and Compton School Association is organising the event on May 22nd. The run will wind its way along a scenic course, taking in views across Compton Down and the countryside of southern Winchester, and the event organisers have arranged for the run to be chip-timed. Don't know what that means. Speaking on behalf of Compton and Shawford Preschool, Chair Nicola Webster said the preschool was unable to hold events for almost 2 years, and the fundraising is vital due to a shortfall in funding. The preschool has been part of the community for over 40 years, yet we're often described as a hidden gem. This is a brilliant opportunity for us to come out of hiding. Anne Robbins, chair of Compton School Association, said, "It's wonderful to be able to hold a fete this year, and the school is looking forward to welcoming everyone. The money raised will go towards outdoor resources and IT." And there's a lovely picture of a whole group of adults all wearing a running kit, but with their arms raised and they're smiling and cheering, actually looking as if they've actually finished the run.
And another really happy article about the journey of the humble swallow across the world. Over the past few editions, we've been focusing our attention on the really big issues that are impacting Hampshire's wildlife, from climate change to global conflict. But it is also good to take a breath and enjoy nature and hand over the last week as the days have got longer. I have started to think about the journey of our swallows. European swallows are one of the 84 species of swallow worldwide, but are by far the most widespread species. In fact, our swallow is the most widespread land bird anywhere on the planet. It is found on every continent apart from Antarctica and breeds right across the Northern Hemisphere. You're just as likely to encounter European swallow in North America as you are in Asia or Europe. Our British swallows are closely tied to the farming community and every April return from South Africa on a journey that for them began in late February, 8,300 miles away from the UK. Over the course of the following 6 weeks, these tiny birds, about the same weight as a robin, will have made their way across the whole continent of Africa and all of Western Europe to reach Hampshire. The male will arrive first and start looking for a suitable nest site, followed by the female about 2 weeks later. A typical mud-lined nest will involve no fewer than 1,200 visits to a nearby pond or ditch to build it. Swallows will typically return to the same nest site year after year, with a typical adult surviving for 4 or 5 years. They will bring up 2 broods of young birds. Each brood will depend on food availability as to how many survive, but typically, if the swallow parents rear 4 birds per brood, a maximum of 3 will make their first flight to Africa, but only 2 will return in the first season back to the UK. There are over 15 million swallows in Europe, but as with many species, the population continues to decline. The intensification of farming is a major cause, with lack of food supply a big issue. They are insect eaters. As well as loss of food, swallows are hunted on their migration, killed in storms, struggle to find enough nesting material during drought, and will like open-fronted, messy farm buildings, which are also in decline across the continent. But we can all help our swallow population to survive in Hampshire. Here are 3 easy steps to take. Firstly, let's create wildflower areas that are full of insects. Whether we have a small back garden or a big estate or farm, we are able to contribute to habitats that provide food. Secondly, if you have a building or an outhouse, don't rebuild it in a way that excludes swallows. And if you can, encourage nesting by putting up a swallow box. Finally, provide a source of wet mud to help them with nesting material. Ditches, ponds with shallow edges, even muddy puddles will help them with their nest building and provide water to drink. Let us do all we can to help this amazing migrant as it returns this year to the UK.
Mm. With that lovely article, that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 8th of April 2022. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Richards, goodbye and thank you for listening. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wobbit and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wobbit. Thank you and goodbye.